There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello, listeners of the 45th Podcast. Welcome back to, what is this, week three of 2018. Hey, Susan, how are you doing?
Hey, Rabia. So, 2018 is definitely not slowing down.
It is not. It's actually sped up, I think.
It has. I mean, at some point, and we've always been saying this, so it's always wrong, but at some point, it can't continue like this. You can't just continue to speed up the news cycle every single week. Infinitely.
I don't know. Right? Apparently you can. I mean, look, when I listened to your episode last week with Siraj, great episode. And Siraj was like, wow, I don't think that, you know, we can beat week two of 2018. And I was thinking, well, let's just wait till week three. And yeah, it was so much happened in this week. I mean, and this happens almost every week now. When you go back and look at what happened at the beginning of the week, it feels like it was so long ago. Because so much else happens. The news cycle is crazy and there's just so much coming at us. And part of me wonders if it's just that this administration is churning out the crazy, or are we just much more like attuned to all of it than we were in past presidencies?
No, they're turning up the crazy. We're less attuned to it because they're so overwhelmed. Man, so I was mostly, for most of the week, second half of the week and the weekend, I was largely offline. So every other, like, you know, 4 hours, I'd check just to see what had happened. And it was always something new and horrific and big. And you're like each time I would think, okay, the next time I check my phone, it's not going to be like this. Yeah. New scandal busting open, to the point where like, I couldn't remember what started the day off.
Yeah. I'll be honest, you know, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, what happened in Hawaii. That happened and it was quickly corrected. It was such a, considering the craziness of the week, I was just like, okay, well, I guess that's okay. It's done.
Oh no. That was like a blip worst to me. So I didn't find out about it, thank God, until after it was all over, until after it was clear. Like, the first thing I saw was, like, Hawaiian missile thing was a hoax. I'm like, what Hawaiian missile thing? Not a hoax. It was a false alarm. And I just, I had to stop reading the accounts of people in Hawaii.
It was scary, yeah.
It was. It just, that's traumatic. You have a million people, and most of them reasonably believed it's a good chance it was true, and thought they were facing their last minutes on Earth.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah. And it just, the idea that that's going to be, that could happen, first of all, but that could happen and not actually change policy going forward one way or another. I don't believe it, because that's a powerful amount of trauma for an entire state to go through.
How did they not have like a secondary, yes, you know, you do, are you sure you want to press this button?
It's like understand. Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Have you seen that?
I have, but I have no recollection of it.
Groot's button.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Crazy. All right. Well, I was going to start off talking this week about, you know, last time we talked about that really insane New York Times interview Trump did. He tops himself. He had a really, the week I think began with this Wall Street Journal interview that came out, but I don't know. It's all kind of fuzzy now, but it was also another crazy one. I don't know if you read the transcript or not, but
I did.
There was a lot of like, what is it called when you just like kind of, not rambling, but like.
Word salad.
Well, word salad, rambling, just, it was all over the place. And I don't know if listening to the audio would make it better.
No, it never does.
But reading it was like, what is happening here?
Well, I'll say, first of all, once again, in this interview, the media interview, like, it's I don't know if you can call it like a softball interview, but there's very little challenge and pushback, which is the same approach New York Times take. And they're all terrible. Like, I'm really tired of saying this because, I mean, he's just going to vomit on the page, whatever, if you don't give him questions. And yeah, the results are insane.
He doesn't respond to questions. He just doesn't.
But you can then know that in advance and get questions that he has to give an answer one way or another. And if he blows up and stops the interview, so be it. That's a story in itself. Is there anything gained from just saying again and again and again this random craziness babble? It doesn't change anything.
It doesn't, but it provides more evidence maybe for future 25th Amendment proceedings. But
he's always so vague. Unless you get him to give specific answers about specific things, it's never going to change anything.
Yeah. He can't give specifics.
If you get him on the record.
Stream of consciousness is what I was trying to say. But there's like not a lot of consciousness here. It was a very long interview. I mean, you know what's interesting to me, how is, and we see this all the time with Trump, but it just happens so many times, this interview where everything for him has to be the biggest, the greatest, the only. For example, he says things like, you know, more than any president in history, I've been the best on regulation. I've passed more legislation than anybody in history. Everything for him is like, he does more than anything. That China has done more for me than anybody in history. We know he tweeted recently, you know, I have been like the witch hunt against me. Like, it's like the greatest witch hunt in American history. He said, I know more about wedges. And the context here was that the journalist was asking whether North Korea is trying to drive a wedge between South Korea and the United States. And his response, instead of just responding to the question, is, I know more about wedges than any human being that's ever lived. That's so weird.
That's his tick. He's limited to like 20 words now, and he just kind of combines them as he goes along. It's always the best of everything. It's a pure narcissism. And like, I know it's a trite answer, but it's also demonstrably true.
Well, he does talk about Mexico, the wall. He recently apparently discovered that there are geographical features between Mexico and the United States that might prevent or not necessitate a wall.
turns out that it's not a big place you can just walk through everywhere. We actually have things to keep us apart without the wall.
Rivers, violent rivers, which he mentions like multiple times.
You know, he heard about people dying crossing the river, and that's like, yeah, something he loved.
Oh yeah, that'd make him happy. It's like the best.
It's America's
wall
natural wall. Yeah. God, and I enjoyed the most probably the repeated times where some aide, I think it was Hope Hicks, was hard to tell because they don't actually name the speaker all the time, but try to get him out of the WSJ interview to some meeting he supposedly had elsewhere in the White House.
Oh, right.
Like again and again, they're like, Mr. Trump, Mr. President, you have a meeting. He's like, oh, I do? Like, that's a verbatim quote. Like three times he's like, oh, I do?
Mm. You know, I think he loves just having like command of an audience, and he's getting an audience, and he just like, he eats it up. He loves hearing himself talk. One of the things he kept saying about the wall, which I thought was crazy, was instead of actually articulating what he means, he goes, you know, you've got to have a wall, but I want to be able to see 200 yards out. I don't want to have a piece of concrete that I can't see. We have to have vision through the wall. I'd like to be able to see 300 or 400 yards instead of where the wall. We have no idea. Are you trying to say you want a glass wall? What are you saying?
My favorite single chyron of the entire, like, everything Trump cycle is the time Fox News put on the screen, Trump, gonna build a see-through wall. Okay. He actually wants to build a see-through wall.
Is it a fence? What the F is it?
If it's not see-through, then if people use like trebuchets to throw drugs over it, they might not see someone on the other side and hit them and kill them. So Trump's very concerned about this and wants to make sure the wall is see-through so the people trebucheting drugs won't accidentally hit victims. I'm not making this up.
Okay.
Well, I would also like to read my favorite line exchange of the whole interview.
Okay.
The Wall Street Journal asked him, Mr. President, you made reference to the book, Steve Bannon, ... Trump cuts him off, and Trump responds, So I was successful. I was always the best athlete. People don't know that.
Oh, yeah. The best athlete. He also said, he said, I was always the best at what I did. Like, just in general. I went to the Wharton School of Fine. I mean, yeah, successful. Yeah, he's the most insecure person that I've never met.
The very first time I ever had a thought of like, oh, shit, Donald Trump could really be president. I don't know when it was exactly, but it was pretty early on. It was before he won the primary. I was at my parents' house and they always have TV on. I walked by and there was some cable show or another had on this like hour long documentary about Trump. And I was like, oh shit, if they're bothering to make a documentary, they actually think he has a chance. But the whole documentary was like documenting how insecure he was. And it just had all these clips of him going, how's my hair look? Is it okay? Did I do okay? Am I all right? How did I do? Was I great? And just the raw insecurity was so off putting.
I mean, I feel like he must have had like a father or parents who just made him feel there's something there.
You know that,
there is
right?
Something behind all this.
Fred Trump was, he passed on some serious daddy issues.
Yeah, I think that's what's going on. Well, I mean, he also talked in this interview, like you mentioned about the book after he went over the successful, but a little bit about Steve Bannon. And, you know, he actually said this, which was amazing. He goes, I talked to Steve very little. I didn't know Steve well, believe it or not. He had very little to do with my win. Certainly very little to do with my win. He says he had nothing to do with my win. And so, Then he goes on to collusion, no collusion, no collusion. who did he say? Oh, yeah, he accuses the FBI of committing treason. So there's that.
With their tweets. It's like he doesn't know text messages and tweets are different.
Right, right. So he texts it. He said that it's a treasonous act. What he tweeted to his lover is a treasonous act because there was some FBI official tweeting something negative about him. It's a personal, texting, a personal text to somebody.
Which, by the way, we should try and do next episode segment on, because that has gotten out of control the way they're trying to report on that story.
Oh, sure. We'd love to hear more about that. So, Susan, out with the old, in with the new. That's the mantra this time of year, right? It's the beginning of the new year.
Yeah, and the most important part of any new morning or new year is caffeine.
Caffeine is very important. And so this year, I am going to be upgrading my coffee routine with Blue Bottle Coffee. And I've had Blue Bottle Coffee in the past. I've talked about it in the past. But I feel like, especially somebody who is constantly sleep-deprived, I have to make it a permanent part of my life.
Yeah, so for me, upgrading didn't mean that much because I was often using the instant stuff.
Instant coffee?
I know, but I don't think I can go back now because the Blue Bottle Coffee is amazing.
It is really some of the most delicious coffee in the world. And I say that as somebody who's not even a big coffee drinker, but it's really, really delicious. And it's shipped to your house within 48 hours of placing your order. It is so fresh. It's roasted like right when you order it. And the beans arrive at peak freshness.
So what I've learned is that I actually prefer my coffee when it's the lightest roast possible. I always thought I preferred dark roast coffee, but I was experimenting. Ah. And it's really good. It tastes, to me, so much more coffee-like. I guess it's not being burned.
Well, you know, I mean, they have a whole range of like different kinds of roasts that people like, and they have so many flavors. And, you know, Blue Bottle, they have an insane dedication to coffee. These people, they search the planet far and wide, and they get exclusive relationships with independent grocers all over the world. They source the most delicious, sustainable coffee there is. So there's a reason it tastes so good to you and to me.
So this year, find out what coffee flavor matches you best. And try it at bluebottlecoffee.com and go to bluebottlecoffee.com/45 for $10 off your first coffee subscription order.
Yep, that's bluebottlecoffee.com/45. Once again, bluebottlecoffee.com/45 to get $10 off your first subscription to their delicious coffee. Don't miss out on this amazing offer. One of the things that people have been stuck on, though, and I know this is like irking you, is the North Korea quote.
Oh, yes. Well, first, I guess we should go ahead and play it. Here's a section from the Wall Street Journal's own audio of the interview.
With that being said, President Xi has been extremely generous with what he said. I like him a lot. I have a great relationship with him. As you know, I have a great relationship with Prime Minister Abe, Japan. And I'd probably have a very good relationship with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. I have relationships with people. I think you people are surprised.
Now, here's so again, one of the times, I think it was like Sunday, first time I've seen the internet in a while. And I had seen all this crazy stuff going on all weekend. And then the first thing I see, and like everyone's talking about, is whether or not in one part of the interview, Donald Trump said I apostrophe D. And the whole thing is the most baffling nonsense. There's always everyone's like, oh, Donald Trump is trying to distract you, or like it's an intentional distraction for the media. 99% of the time, I think it's bullshit. I think there may be some merit to it this time.
But how is this a distraction from Trump when it's the Wall Street Journal reported him saying something?
Because no one is talking about the craziest shit in that interview. All anyone's talking about is this stupid eye versus eye thing.
Well, here's the thing, though. I actually disagree with you. And the reason I disagree with you is because the reason I don't think it's a crazy thing to debate, a crazier thing here is that I actually agree that I think the Wall Street Journal got it wrong. To me, when you listen to the clip, it sounds like he's saying I'd have a good relationship. And I think the reason people are concerned about this is because there are questions about his mental health. There are questions about whether this guy's like delusional. There are questions. And I also wonder, before I heard the audio, I thought, if he actually said, I have a great relationship, I'm like, is this something that's happening behind the scenes and it just slipped? Like, what's happening here?
So here's why I think it doesn't matter. There are 20 examples in that interview that show definitively this guy is losing it. This one particular one doesn't matter. And also, it is crazy either way.
Fair,
okay, first of all, if he says, I have a relationship, you're like, oh, well, what? I mean, yeah, that's bonkers. But he says, I would. Okay, you would if what? If it's a conditional, we need the if statement there. Under what circumstances would you have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un? Like, if you pick up the phone and call him, then why aren't you doing it? If you could just shut this whole thing down with a phone call, why not? If you think you have one now based on, like, indirect interactions, how come you're tweeting at him that he's, like, a stupid dictator who's fat and short and all the other nonsense he said on Twitter? It's so clearly false either way that who cares? And I think that the fact that everyone's focused on that takes away from everything else in that interview we should all be freaking out over. Also, in the interview itself, it's very clear from the next lines that the interviewer understood this to be a statement that I do currently have a relationship, because he followed it up by saying, Wall Street Journal says, just to be clear, you haven't spoken to the North Korean leader. I mean, when you say relationship with Korea, and then Trump responds, I don't want to comment on it. I don't want to comment. I'm not saying I have or haven't, but I just don't.
That's a weird response. That almost, I mean, he's saying maybe I have a relationship with him.
Yeah, so he, even in the interview, it's whether or not he said I or meant to say I'd, the interviewer understood him to say I and directly asked him about it, and he does not deny that he implied he may have a current existing relationship with Kim Jong-un.
Wouldn't that be crazy? That
he just, yeah, the plot twist.
But then Trump does then go on to make it sound like he's actually talking about something else, because he goes on to say, I can turn like my enemies into my best friends very quickly. I've done that with lots of people, dozens of people, 20, 30 people. And so it makes it sound like he's like they're maybe kind of talking past each other is also possible. I just don't know what the hell's going on, to be honest. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, it seems that Trump's expectations of his relationship with Kim Jong-un have been vastly overestimated, because yesterday, as North Korea and South Korea are preparing for their talks, well, some backstory here. I think over the new year, early January, the president of South Korea said something like, oh, Donald Trump should be credited for helping open these inter-Korean talks. You know, essentially crediting Trump for making North Korea talk to South Korea. And North Korea responded with basically a tantrum saying, how dare you say such a thing? We could withdraw these talks if we want to. We could stop all plans to go to the Olympics. How dare you accuse us of, like, talking to you because of what Trump did? So, great relationship there.
Yeah. It's like a reality show. All right. Well, I wonder what's going to happen there, though, if they're going to resume the Olympics, like working together in the Olympics.
They did have their talks, so.
Okay. Hopefully it works out. I mean, look, at the end of the day, anything good happens, Trump's going to take credit for it. Anything bad happens, anywhere, for about anything, he's going to find a way to blame it on other people.
And other countries have an incentive to actually play along with this and give him credit for things he hasn't done. Mm-hmm. Because, again, it's America. You can't piss the guy off by, you know, telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But speaking of North Korea, before we started recording, we were talking about all the bloody nose talk.
Yeah, there's that.
That's still ongoing. And I got to say, that's really terrifying, because it just the whole situation, it, by its existence, by the fact there's a public discussion about this, does increase the odds of war happening.
Yeah, but the bloody nose, it refers to, there have been numerous reports that the administration is quietly planning a preemptive strike on North Korea. That they're calling, I guess, a bloody nose attack or something. And I mean, the visual there, you know, it's like a punch to the face, a quick strike. I don't know what they think that's going to accomplish other than just provoke. I mean, is it a punishment? What is it?
It's to put them in their place. It's to be like, yeah. Hey, look how big we are. You better not do something really bad or we could stomp you. We only need a little
that.
Bit.
They know that. We don't have to prove it.
And a bloody nose, there's no rational way North Korea could have, you know, incur a bloody nose attack. And the moment it happens, not assume or not fear that this is a full-on invasion. On the other hand, you know what? If you did want to actually attack North Korea, if your goal was, like, regime change, one strategy might be to broadcast that you're planning a bloody nose attack. Mm-hmm. Like, leak to all the media, leak to everyone, like, oh, we're going to do a bloody nose attack, with the hopes that North Korea will believe it. And when they see the first signs of attack, not immediately retaliate, thinking it's only a bloody nose.
I mean, it could be that. But, you know, if you're talking about, like, regime change cannot happen there. It just can't.
Like, yeah. They're going to try, it sounds like, from everyone talking. And to bring home the reality of what it would look like and feel like for this to happen, I mean, we have Hawaii from this weekend.
Right, right.
Which was not, that was a state issue. From all accounts, it was a very poorly designed interface on the sort of the testing software.
Well, I mean, I think I was, you know, it happened. It was a terrible mistake. I mean, it was terrifying for the people there. But it did not move our president, who is steadfast in the face of this terror. He continued to play golf.
He had the back nine to finish up.
And I don't think he has said a word about it since publicly. He had said nothing about it and didn't tweet about it, nothing.
Actually, he did last night. Like last night, he had some brief comments that were relatively restrained and normalish. But, you know, it took him a long time to do it.
I think, did he say something about, oh, it was a mistake and they admitted
it? Oh, he just said like, oh yeah, it was all the Hawaii's fault and they at least admitted it.
So somebody else's fault. Speaking of faults, it is also somebody else's fault that his trip to London was canceled. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so not only are we happily pissing off our allies and our enemies in Asia, we have decided to also piss off our closest allies across the Atlantic.
So, Trump tweets out this week that the reason I canceled my trip to London, he was going to go to London, inaugurate the new embassy there, a U.S. embassy, is that I'm not a big fan of the Obama administration having sold perhaps the best located and finest embassy in London for peanuts, only to build a new one in an off location for $1.2 billion. Bad deal. Wanted me to cut ribbon. No.
He's treating it like one of his real estate deals.
He's treating it like he is he's like showing up at like a new used car location. He's like a local celebrity and he's rejecting the invitation. It's unbelievable. On top of which, I believe this deal was cut by Bush, by GW, not by Obama.
Apparently only for, and again, the UK embassy had to come out and and like correct the whole premise of the tweet there. And again, it's all bogus. He canceled the trip because the UK is planning all kinds of
massive protests.
Yeah.
He can't go to countries that actually have freedom of assembly. He can only like China, the Gulf countries, you know, places where they're so controlled that there will be no protesters when he shows up. That's the only places he can visit.
And I saw someone in foreign policy world talking about how this is really alienating us from democracies, because in countries like Saudi Arabia or Russia or elsewhere where there is no real democracy, those leaders can afford to, you know, say whatever nonsense they got to say to make Trump happy. Because Trump is so unpopular everywhere that there's a lot of pressure on leaders not to do this. But, you know, in some countries, it doesn't matter. But in democracies, though, leaders will have electoral consequences if they try and, you know, play Trump's stupid game. So they can't do it, which means he gets alienated from them. And it's this whole vicious cycle of, like, who can afford to, like, publicly praise Trump all the time?
I mean, it's kind of sad that we are being, the United States is being lumped with completely undemocratic nations at this point, aligned with those versus our traditional allies and other democratic Western countries. So it is what it is, though.
Yeah. And I should do a correction. Apparently, the false news awards? Fake news awards.
What happened to those?
They're going this Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Excellent.
And, you know, credit where credit's due. Apparently, Jeff Flake is timing his speech about Trump and his Stalinist tendencies to coincide around the same time as the fake news awards.
Jeff Flake is going all, you know, but you know what?
A little.
I mean, it's a little too, you know, too little too late type of thing for me, to be honest.
It's about symbolism, though. In this case, symbolism will matter, so.
Look, I'm not saying he shouldn't do it. I'm just saying I wish he would have done more at the right time. But yeah, no, I look forward to that. I guess it's going to happen after this episode drops. We'll definitely talk about it next week. I also do wonder who is going to cut that ribbon. Who do you think is going to cut that ribbon now?
Obama?
Send Mike. That would be awesome. I swear, I just wish he would just pretend like he's our shadow president still. Just keep showing up everywhere. Show up at Davos.
The alternate universe where Obama is a petty motherfucker who just goes around trolling Trump at every opportunity.
He should give his own State of the Union. I'm not kidding.
He should be amazing. If he just wanted to be a full-time Trump troll, I mean, it wouldn't help things, and he's doing the right thing, but also it'd be pretty great.
It would make every day worth getting up for. But anyway. all right. Something else that happened last week was the annual presidential physical. Oh, my goodness. So it happened. And guess what? Not a lot of people got much of the story because there was a very, very short statement released by the White House in which, okay, so basically there's an annual physical given to the president that is given by, I think, a White House. It's like the same doctor. It's not his personal doctor. It's a White House doctor who...
I think
you're right. Yeah, it's a naval doctor. And it's the same doctor who did it for Obama and President Bush. And the only statement released, so this happened last Friday, the only statement released was that the president is in excellent health and I look forward to briefing some of the details on Tuesday. Now, that would be tomorrow, the day this drops. Now, the funny thing is this statement was released by the White House, not by the doctor himself. And It was like signed Ronnie Jackson, but his name was misspelled, so it wasn't the doctor actually saying that.
But they're so incompetent in how they do things all the time, and misspellings appear in all their statements. It could be that someone just transcribed it wrong.
You know what? You could be right. I will give Dr. Jackson the benefit of the doubt. But for Trump to be in excellent health, you know, Vox did a little bit of a profile about what Trump's health is like, and let's talk a little bit about his vitals. So he's like 6'2". You know, 236 pounds. I mean, I don't think for that height, that's such a big deal.
He's pretty big.
He's a big boy. As far as we know, he only takes two kinds of meds, one for cholesterol, one for anti-male pattern baldness, which I'm sure is like his biggest nightmare. But here's the thing. We know he doesn't like to work out. He has said he actually has a really weird idea about exercise. He thinks exercise is a disaster. He says all my friends who work out all the time, they're going to go for knee replacement, hip replacements. And he says when he stands and performs in front of an audience, that is exercise. He downs his meals with 12 Diet Cokes a day. In one sitting, he apparently, with some journalists, ate 2 Big Macs, 2 fish filet, and a chocolate malted. He actually believes that fast food is cleaner and safer than other food. And apparently...
Because it's not being poisoned.
Because it's not poisoned, but cleaner? I mean, Air Force One, they say that there's 4 major food groups. McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, pizza, and Diet Coke. So I don't know about his physical health. And I have a feeling we're not going to find out a lot about it. Because here's the thing. You know, Trump is also entitled to the same patient privacy rights as other Americans. And so it's actually up to him what gets reported. So I'm guessing not a lot is going to get reported.
I mean, all I can say is that those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. So yeah. No comment on this.
Well, yeah, I'm with you there. But I will say this, Susan, neither you and I would tweet out that we are an excellent physical.
That's true.
And we are also not running the damn country. You know, by the way, also... To this doctor, over 70 psychologists, psychiatrists, and mental health professionals sent a letter to him imploring him to do a neurological and psychiatric exam, but it's actually not required, so yeah. Not happening.
But did you explain his theory about exercise? Because personally, I embrace this one.
That it's actually bad for your body? No, you don't.
We're batteries. We are batteries. We are born with finite amounts of energy, and working out just diminishes. My go-to excuse.
You know what? It's a great excuse. The problem is, I, with personal experience, as someone who has had like bouts of years in my life when I've been very, very physically active and then not, I, you know what? You can recharge that battery is all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. So the analogy doesn't stand. Anyhow, all I know is after seeing pictures of President Obama swimming with his shirt off, I don't know. It's tough.
It does something then.
It's tough.
So as an attorney and podcaster, I am often working all over the U.S., meeting witnesses, talking to people about the podcast or the law, and a lot of times I've ended up in coffee shops, which is, for podcasts, terrible because you can't record anything. The audio is awful. And also, just who wants to be meeting somewhere like a coffee shop to be discussing something as sensitive as topics we cover on our other show, Undisclosed?
Well, there's an alternative to the coffee shop scene, and that is DaVinci, because DaVinci offers incredibly affordable meeting rooms in well-known office locations in every city. So not only do you get your own private space, you're actually going to come across looking like a professional, because they're like in real office locations.
So wherever you end up being, for whatever you're doing for work, you'll have somewhere to go that makes you look professional.
Yeah. You can search, book, and meet with the DaVinci platform, finding the perfect meeting room for your face-to-face business meetings as easy as clicking, search, book, and meet. It's that easy. And whether you need a day office or a conference room, a boardroom, training space, they've got it all.
And your DaVinci meeting room will come with high-speed internet and all the presentation tools you need to make the meeting a success. And it all starts at only $10 an hour. And I can tell you from experience, that is a good deal for running meeting rooms in random cities.
That's actually incredible. $10 an hour. Yeah. And you know what? They're all over the country. So if you're based in Phoenix and you need to meet customers or clients face-to-face in New York, LA, Omaha, wherever, they've got thousands of rooms, 5,000 affordable meeting rooms in well-known office locations in every single city. And our listeners are going to get an even better deal than the one you just told them, better than $10 an hour.
So go to DaVinciMeet.com/45, and for a limited time, get 50% off your first purchase. That's DaVinciMeet.com/45. Terms and conditions apply. But go to DaVinciMeet.com/45 for more details.
And then there's some ladies that popped up.
Again, now, you know, I'm kind of two minds in the story. And, of course, we're talking about Stormy Daniels.
Stormy weather.
On the one hand, this all has to do with entirely consensual sexual conduct. So it's a different sort of issue. On the other hand...
Should we tell the listeners what happened?
Everyone knows by now, hopefully.
Everyone knows.
So it came out in the Wall Street Journal. They waited until after their interview to, you know, bust this one out for obvious reasons. And I'm okay with that kind of timing because there's no way Trump would have talked to him if they'd done it before. But Michael Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, paid off Stormy Daniels a month before the election. Supposedly paid her $130,000 so that she would not report on a consensual sexual encounter or like affair she had with Trump after his marriage to Melania.
Already.
Yeah. And so again, yeah, it's definitely not the type of story that we heard about the 14 women before the election or how many came out talking about times that Trump sexually harassed them or sexually assaulted them. On the other, it's hard to comprehend that we live in a world where it can come out that the president paid off a porn actress so that she'd be quiet about his affair.
Two of them.
And did this right before the election.
Right.
And it's a one-day story.
Yeah, I think I'm more surprised with the almost non-reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody in the GOP has even... it's just they don't care at all. And if... I just... Like, you know, somebody tweeted, imagine if Obama... I actually can't even imagine it.
I can't even imagine it. And even today, if it came out that, say, like, Obama had like...
an affair.
Kissed a woman, like, back in, like, 2003 or something, before he was running for office, really.
As a married
man, That would still overwhelm the news cycle, even right now, today, I think. But it turns out that... So there's more of a backstory here, too, and that this is actually not the first time that the Stormy Daniels story came out. Before the election, it was briefly mentioned, but she was already paid off by then and didn't come forward. Apparently, after the deal was reached, she didn't get paid, so she was considering talking anyway. And then Michael Cohen finally
came. She didn't get paid. Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't ever pay contractors. This time, he was like, I probably should do it. But it turns out also that, we know of a second woman. This was his mistress back in late 2000s. And she was paid by the National Enquirer. It was a catch and kill story where they, you know, paid her for the story rights with no intention of ever running it, so she couldn't tell anyone else about it.
Jessica Drake.
And Jessica Drake, no, that was Karen McDougal. That's who it was. Oh, has the same attorney, by the way, as Stormy Daniels. But then there's Jessica Drake, and she was the one who did come forward earlier, before the election, and said that she was once in Tahoe and Trump was there, and he tried to invite her back to his hotel room and offered to pay her $10,000. She has also, it turns out, signed a non-disclosure agreement and cannot say the word Trump out loud anymore. So that's three women who have been paid off to not go public or to, you know, keep them quiet about their stories of either like paid sex or like extramarital sex. And somehow Trump still has more evangelical support than any other president ever.
You know, if this came out about, actually, I would say, even a Republican congressman, I think his career would be over.
It would before Trump. I mean, I guess now I'm wondering if Republicans are kind of immune to this. That's not true, because there's that governor who got caught.
Right. I still feel like there are certain standards but that's the thing. I think what you said was true earlier, where... You know, with Trump, we've just kind of all kind of given up. There's no low that he can go that we're like, oh, well.
And to be fair, it's less of a news story because we all expect this kind of thing to be true. We all know it.
Mm-hmm.
So confirmation doesn't really change that much. But also, and for me, this kind of goes back to the whole war on the media thing. Trump, it's not done in good faith. I mean, stating the obvious there. But for any other politician... If a story comes out like this in a major mainstream publication with witnesses and sources all backed up, they really can't deny it like that.
Did he deny this?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I mean, recently, like in this past week.
Oh, yeah. The Cohen came out. So no one actually is denying the payments were made, interestingly. Everyone's refusing to make comment on that. But the White House and Trump's attorneys have all fallen back on the excuse that what Cohen said. These rumors have circulated again and again. President Trump once again denies any such occurrence, and Ms. Daniels has as well. But it's this whole idea that the media isn't real, it's all fake. when Trump denied something that can't be denied, we all read into it as him falling back to his frame of reference for the world, which is the media isn't real. So his denials aren't so much a denial of like basic facts as they are him restating his position, which is no media can be trusted. And it works somehow. And it's also like breaking apart our democracy because we no longer have any kind of shared reference. And Obama himself stated it recently. He was back in Fox News for somewhere he was talking and said that, you know, people who watch Fox live in a different planet than people who are listening to NPR. It's absolutely right. And this sort of divide between what is reality, it's not sustainable to democracy.
I will say this, though. I actually think Trump could say, you know what? It's all true. What are you going to do? And nothing would happen. Like nothing. I don't think it would hurt him an iota to admit it's true. In fact, I think there's plenty of his base that the guys would be like, yeah, good for him. High five. And women would be like, well, boys will be boys. Like the locker room talk shit.
It would hurt him, I think, because it underwhelmed his denial of reality, basically. His whole strategy is to make reality unknowable, to make the truth undeterminable. Mm. And if he confirms any kind of truth one way or another,
right,
that breaks away at his own frame of reference, which is that you can't ever know anything for real. There's all kinds of views. Everyone's views have their own validity. And also by not ever confirming anything, by just offering all these like crazy explanations, people who want to support him, his base, the diehards, they can just keep trying until they find a reason they can get behind. People who really are offended by this kind of behavior can fall on the, oh, he never really did that, never really said that. And people who are in favor of it can like be like, oh, yeah, look at our president. He tells it like it is and doesn't like it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's why he's always so evasive in all of his answers, is that he wants to make sure that he is not contributing to our collective ability to know what's reality.
Right. He doesn't want to give any credibility to any news, unless it's like positive of him. Yeah,
and even if it's only him, and there's no media about it, he himself tends to avoid giving any kind of direct answer.
Yeah. Well, speaking of alternate realities, Susan and I have another podcast called Undisclosed for our listeners who might not be aware of it, where we look at wrongful conviction cases. And a lot of time in these cases, you'll have all these conflicting witness testimonies, which takes me to what we're going to talk about next. Which is something that happened, a meeting at the White House, out of which some really alarming reports came. And then you have folks saying, no, that didn't happen. All kinds of conflicting witness testimony is the way I'm looking at this.
Well, let's start with what really matters here.
Go ahead. And
that is the lives of everyone affected by this policy issue, DACA.
Right. So this meeting was about immigration. It was about DACA. Let me talk about DACA. So for just a refresh, and we've talked about DACA in the past, but I just want to quickly refresh our listeners on what it's about, refresh your memories. DACA is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Deferred action basically means we're not going to remove you or deport you. People use the word deport. It's not deportation. It's actually removal. We're not going to remove you from the country right now. We're going to defer any action against you. It was available for anybody who arrived here before they were 16 years old. When they were children, they have to show they were in good standing, meaning they stayed in school. They never had any criminal history. You have to be here at least since before 2007. There's a lot of different, like, you know, requirements for the application. And if you applied for DACA and you're approved for it, basically you got work authorization and you got every 2 years you had to renew it. So at least you had a 2-year reprieve. Now, these are young people who basically found themselves many a times having graduated from high school and suddenly realizing, not even knowing until then, that, hey, I don't have any status here. I have no social security number. I can't go to college. I can't get a job. A lot of times these kids wouldn't even realize until they were at that point about, you know, entering adulthood, which is pretty traumatic on its own. So, you know, Trump is using this, you know, Trump had previously said, we're not going to renew DACA. They stopped taking applications. Courts were like, nope, you got to take the application. So they're taking them again. But he has set like this arbitrary, I don't know if it's an arbitrary deadline. He set a deadline of March 5th where he said that's when he's going to decide whether or not to continue the DACA program. And, you know, the thing about DACA and what's frustrating to me about this as somebody who practiced immigration law for a long time is that, you know, President Obama could have moved DACA into some kind of permanent status. And that's what we expected. I filed lots of these for applicants when it first came into existence with the expectation Because look, you know, when people came forward to file these, I remember I had clients who were scared. They said, listen, right now we're off the grid. Nobody knows where we live. They don't have our fingerprints. You know, we could continue to live like this, or we can come forward out of the shadows, give them all our information, and then just hope that they deliver. And, you know, the promise to everybody was that, yeah, this will eventually become a path to citizenship. It could take a long time, but you're not going to be hurt by applying for DACA. But with Trump's threats, they absolutely could, because now ICE will have all their information. And so he's threatening to take DACA off the table. And, you know, but the weird thing to me is that I feel like he really wants, I mean, he wants to continue DACA, and did you hear the clip with him and who was it? It was Senator Feinstein, where she said, we would like a clean DACA bill. And he goes, yeah, we want a clean DACA bill.
But he didn't know what that meant, probably.
He didn't know it. And then he had to be corrected by some of the GOP senators saying, no, that's not, we have conditions. You know, there are things they want. They want more border security. They want the wall. They want to get rid of, again, the diversity visa, which I feel like if he actually knew how that worked, he wouldn't give a crap about it, but he doesn't.
No one has explained to him how that works. Apparently, like, so far, I think it counts at 12 different times, he has described the visa lottery as the countries submit their citizens into a lottery to send them here.
It's completely ridiculous.
And no one, I mean, maybe someone has explained to him what it really is. He just ignored it. But I will also note that line where he said, oh, yeah, let's do the clean DACA thing, they edited that out of official transcripts at first.
They did. It's on video, though.
Yeah.
It's on video.
Yeah.
I know they want to get rid of chain migration. And I also think that he has no idea how the hell that works. Because if you sat him down and said, explain to us, President Trump, what relatives can a U.S. citizen or a green card holder like actually sponsor? He wouldn't know. I think he thinks you can bring in like grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins, and you can't. It's very limited. The people you can sponsor is very limited. But these are the conditions under which a GOP is willing and Trump are willing to negotiate on DACA. And he's been tweeting furiously about it this week, blaming the Dems for holding up DACA. He's saying the Dems are going to kill DACA because they're going to, some Democrats have said we're not going to vote on the budget, right? If we don't come to an agreement here. You know, one of the things about DACA is this, you know, if they really thought this through, like as a thought exercise, I actually personally don't believe they're going to end DACA. I think they're going to continue. He's going to continue to renew it and hold it as a negotiating point. But let's say they did. If they ended it, you know what would happen? We're talking about 800,000 people who are impacted by this. The cost to find them, arrest them, detain them, remove them would be billions of dollars to the economy. On top of losing tuition that colleges are getting from these students, on top of losing taxes that they're paying for the ones who have jobs. I don't know why nobody's talking about the economic consequences of...
And it's not popular, though, either.
It's not.
Economically, electorally unpopular. But it's his chosen hostage. So what you get, like, you choose your hostage, you hold a gun to the head and say, I'm going to kill us unless I get XYZ. I mean, I guess I could try and swap out for a new hostage, but that's not going to work so great. And in terms of negotiation positions, I mean, this is obviously Trump's like, I'm the negotiator. I'm going to find something and threaten it and get a deal that way. Well, he's already like messed that up entirely, because back in like early September, he tweeted out, Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something Obama administration unable to do. If they can't, I will revisit the issue. So you're just saying if Congress doesn't do anything, you're going to revisit yourself. So, I mean, that really undermines any incentive or any motivation to absolutely get this through now.
Yeah, but you know what? Just because he said it doesn't mean he would actually do it. There's that.
It doesn't. But it also means that no one really knows for sure what he'll do. And he's lost. If people thought the Democrats cannot know for certain right now that he really will let DACA die. They're thinking there's a good chance he's bluffing.
Yeah. So guess what, Susan? This year, I did something that I didn't think I would do, which is sign up for an 8K race. I am completely out of shape. I have no training under my belt. I haven't been in a gym in a long time, but I've got an 8K coming up in less than 3 months. So
I will be there to cheer you on.
Thank you for being there to cheer me on. It will be in DC, and it'd be awesome. But to get to that point, in the next 2.5 months, I have to get into shape, and I have to start working out. But I can't do that until I get good workout gear. And that's where our next sponsor comes in, Fabletics. Fabletics is co-founded by Kate Hudson. You know the actress Kate Hudson? And it is premium activewear at a great value.
These are, simply put, the world's best leggings. They deliver on a performance level, so you can get the most out of your workout. But they're also super cute. Just saying.
They are very cute.
Yeah. Yep. So you can wear them even if you're not working out.
And you, who could that be? That's me when I stop training for this. But, you know, they have this great VIP membership program, and members earn rewards, and they save 40 to 50% off retail prices. You know, the Fabletics, if you go to their website and you check out, like, some of their designs, it's fashionable, it's premium, the fabrics are wonderful.
And every month, they have cool new styles to go through. It's definitely something to look forward to, and you just go to the website, check it out, and decide you want to buy something that month.
They also have, by the way, a huge range of sizes from extra, extra small to 3X. And they come in petite, regular, and tall lengths. And I honestly, like, I challenge you guys to try these out and tell me that they're not the best. They are the best, some of the best, like, athletic wear you're ever going to try on.
Yeah, as a tall person, it's really nice to have leggings that actually go to your ankles.
So go to Fabletics.com/4050 today and get two pairs of their amazing leggings for just $24. That's $12 for a premium legging. I mean, that's like really, really ridiculously cheap. That's $24, two pairs of leggings when you become a VIP member. Seriously, they're the world's best leggings. They are a $99 value, and you get two for only $24 when you join at Fabletics.com/4050. Once again, that's Fabletics.com/4050. And like me, maybe putting them on will inspire you to get into shape this year too. Something else happened at that meeting.
Talk about that. Yeah. I've heard tell that something else was said.
Yeah. So they were talking about, you know, other immigration programs, temporary relief programs for people in certain situations. There's temporary immigration programs. And it got to Haiti.
Well, let's set the stage here.
Okay.
So we know we have this. So the bill was put together in large part by Lindsey Graham and Durbin. So Durbin is the only Democratic congressman or senator at this meeting. And he is there with Lindsey Graham, Republican. And they thought, apparently, they thought they were going in alone to talk to Trump. And when they get there, they've got a little bit of an audience. So in total, there are seven congressmen and senators there, plus Trump. In addition to Graham and Durbin, there's Perdue, Cotton, McCarthy, Goodlatte, and Diaz-Balart. So that's our players here. We have the meeting, and that evening, or that afternoon even, Washington Post came out describing one of the exchanges. And here is Durbin describing what exactly was said in that meeting.
As Senator Graham made his presentation, the president interrupted him several times with questions, and in the course of his comments, said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist. He used those words advisedly. I understand how powerful they are. But I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday. You've seen the comments in the press. I have not read one of them that's inaccurate. To no surprise, the president started tweeting this morning denying that he used those words. It is not true. He said these hate-filled things, and he said them repeatedly. When the question was raised about Haitians, for example, we have a group that have temporary protected status in the United States because they were the victims of crises and disasters and political upheaval. The largest group is El Salvador, and the second is Honduran, and the third is Haitian. And when I mentioned that fact to him, he said, Haitians, do we need more Haitians? And then he went on and started to describe the immigration from Africa that was being protected in this bipartisan measure. That's when he used these vile and vulgar comments, calling the nations they come from shitholes. The exact word used by the president, not just once, but repeatedly. That was the nature of this conversation. When it came to the issue of, quote, chain migration, I said to the president, do you realize how painful that term is to so many people? African Americans believe that they migrated to America in chains. And when you speak about chain migration, it hurts them personally. And he said, oh, that's a good line. And then when I talked to him about the impact this has on family unification in a nation that values families with the flag as the most important symbols of our future, they scoffed at this notion. It was a heartbreaking moment.
The immediate reactions were kind of mixed, obviously, as always. There's like, you know.
I think the immediate reactions were pretty horrified across the board.
The ones I saw, and again, I may have missed a lot, so I didn't probably get it till hours later, but the ones I saw were saying, like, oh, Biden once said the F-bomb. As if the problem here was vulgarity and not the...
Not the racism inherent here, not the how about we get some Norwegians up in the country, as if those folks want to come here, considering the kinds of amazing, much better lifestyle than Americans, how they live. This is not the first time, obviously. Look, he has attacked people of color from countries of color so many times, not just in his career, even during the campaign, even during his presidency. So this is not,
everyone knows Trump's a racist. This is not a point we should be debating anymore. He is absolutely even a racist with white national sympathies.
I mean, he opened his campaign with, you know, Mexican immigrants are criminals and rapists. I think one of the more shock, I'm not at all shocked because, you know, I feel like he probably thought I'm in a room with some friends here. I'm going to say whatever it is I want. And then there was apparently some contradiction. Somebody's like, oh, no, he didn't say shithole. He said shit house. Like that.
Well,
makes
no one
better.
Said that yet. No one said anything about that yet. So the
Who
real
said that? Where did it come from?
Well, so the real issue here and the real shocking thing about this, not that Trump was racist, not that he said that racism openly to the lawmakers. It's what happened afterwards.
Yeah.
So at first we just had Durbin on the record. And then we have Lindsey Graham, who is himself like acting like a hostage of the Trump administration because he used to be the, you know,
but he's not
one of the Never Trumpers. He is not. So his response, he did not confirm it said that it happened exactly or not. He didn't ever use the shithole word. But what Durbin said is that during the meeting, here's a quote. Durbin said, Graham spoke up and made a direct comment on what the president said. For him to confront the president as he did, literally sitting next to him, took extraordinary political courage and I respect him for it. Which, side note, objecting to blatant racism is not extraordinarily courageous. It's kind of like the bare minimum of decent personhood, but whatever. And so Graham, who immediately after the meeting, before this whole story came out, had told the press, we had a meeting and I will tell you that I'm hopeful. After Durbin's statement came out, Graham released his own statement and said, I appreciate Senator Durbin's statements and I have enjoyed working with him and many others on this important issue. The American ideal is embraced by people over the globe. It was best said a long time ago, E pluribus unum out of many, one. Diversity has always been our strength and our weakness. In reforming immigration, we cannot lose these American ideals. And he went on to say, the president and all those attending the meeting know what I said and how I feel. I've always believed that America is an idea, not defined by its people, but by its ideals. And another, lawmaker, state lawmaker in South Carolina has said that he spoke to Graham and Graham had told him that the media reports are basically accurate.
And Flake as well. Flake said that he met with these folks right after the meeting and they confirmed to him that this was, that they told him that this, before it became public in the media, Flake was told by them right after the meeting that this happened.
I know you weren't in the meeting on Thursday, but I believe you've spoken with those who were in the meeting. You just heard Senator Perdue right there saying the president didn't use those comments that were, didn't use those words that were widely attributed to him. Do you believe that?
Well, all I can say is I was in a meeting directly afterwards where those who had presented to the president our proposal spoke about the meeting. And they said those words were used before those words went public. So that's all I can tell you.
So, yeah, we've got, you know, at least two Republican lawmakers going on the record saying, yeah, that happened. That's a thing that went on. Oh, and the White House, of course. Here is the White House's statement when asked about this exchange during the meeting. Certain Washington politicians choose to fight for foreign countries, but President Trump will always fight for the American people. Like other nations that have merit-based immigration, President Trump is fighting for permanent solutions that make our country stronger by welcoming those who can contribute to our society, grow our economy, and assimilate into our great nation. Notice there's zero denial that this was said.
Zero denial. This comes from spokesman Raj Shah, who I can guarantee comes from a country that Trump thinks is a shithole.
So, I mean, apparently it's like any... I guess the countries that aren't shitholes are like Eastern Europe and Asia, because those were ones on his okay list for some reason. And initially, on the very first day, like the day, I guess Friday, the day after it came out, Senators Perdue and Cotton stated that they do not recall the president saying those comments specifically.
Wow.
And Trump, of course, that morning had tweeted, "The language used by me at the DACA meeting was tough, but this was not the language used. What was really tough was the outlandish proposal made. A big setback for DACA." Yeah. And although initially these senators did not recall the president of the United States saying shithole repeatedly in a meeting and describing foreign countries, their memory improved.
I mean, I'm just kind of grossed out by the response of the GOP. I'm just so tired of saying the same thing over and over. It's like, you know... it's just blatant lies. They're just completely, completely lying. And it's shocking to me. I'm surprised that Graham hasn't come out and said, responded to this.
You know, it's not the first time it's happened, because also in earlier stories, at least twice, someone's reported on something that Trump said in meetings with Republican leaders. And Trump goes and tweets, "This is a lie. How dare they?" And guess who could clear it up really quickly? Like McConnell and Ryan, who were in those meetings. They don't say a peep. They let the president falsely claim he didn't say what he actually said. And they're entirely, they didn't go as far to like say anything at all, like Cotton Perdue are doing. But then we have Kirstjen Nielsen. She is DHS secretary after departure of General Kelly, who is doing a fantastic job of restraining the president's tweeting. you might say, why would, you know, secretary of the DHS and these senators come out and just say outright lies? And apparently it's been emerged that what these guys are relying on, what they're, the thin thread that they're holding on to pretend they haven't totally lost their souls, is that they're claiming they actually heard the president say the word shithouse instead of shithole. So therefore, they're not lying when they deny that he said that specific phrase or those words.
So somebody it's needs to ask them different. That. Did you hear that? Yeah.
Yeah. No one's, in all these interviews, no one's like, so what did the president say? You're acknowledging it got like, you know, a very passionate arguments are made. What word did the president say? And again, this just goes back to undermining the ability to tell to know the truth by quibbling over this word difference, which is bullshit because no one says shithouse like that. It was totally shithole. And even though it doesn't matter, like it's
it
exact same
matter.
Set, exact same problem. They're just focusing on this so that they can cause mass confusion by going on TV and denying it. And everyone assumes, oh, well, it's now disputed. There's no truth known either way. It's one of those things we'll never get down to the bottom of. But here's the thing. We have not heard from people, everyone at that meeting. Right. We still have three people, at least.
Who aren't saying a word.
Who haven't said a word. Yeah. So.
Interpret really that as you will.
Do you really think that there would be three Republicans in a meeting that a Democrat came out of and started lying about outrageous and slanderous things the president said, and they wouldn't go on the record and correct it? There's no universe this is true. Everyone knows that these guys who are denying it are lying their asses off. And again, how does a country come back from this? When you have senators who are refusing to protest the president's racist lying.
Forget that. You now have them saying, responding to people saying.
And joining it.
People who are saying he's racist. You have now have senators saying, well, you can't expect, you know, to call somebody a racist and then have him negotiate. Like, that is the offense here. Like, identifying him as the racist is the offense. Did you see that? I don't know if it was a tweet or a press.
Yeah. Was that Rand Paul? It sounds like Rand Paul.
I don't know if it was Rand Paul or Paul Ryan or they're all one big blur. Middle-aged white man blur at this point.
And the brave response, the Republican bravery, comes from the one who just didn't outright deny it happened. And that's Graham. Yeah. So, you know, this is extraordinarily dangerous. When you have a situation where the president can lie at will and knows that his back will be covered, and not just like in normal political, like, shading of the truth, but outright say whatever the hell he wants whenever he wants, and he'll not suffer a blowback from his own party. I mean, there aren't any checks and balances. They're all gone. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, by giving everyone an excuse what to believe, you can avoid alienating your base at all, because you can just choose what to believe. You can choose to believe that Trump didn't say that the countries were shitholes. You can choose to believe he did say it, but it's not racist or not bad. Or you can believe he said it and you think race, you are racist and you think countries like that are shitholes because they have brown and black people.
At this point, I just wouldn't be surprised if at some point, like an internal memo will emerge that'll say these countries are shitholes. Like put them on, there's a list, there's a secret list somewhere that he hand wrote, has like Cheeto stains on it. But you know, there has been a strong.
Well, no, it won't have Cheeto stains because it'll be Stephen Miller's writing.
That's right. There has been a strong global reaction to this, of course, one by the African Union, which is very powerful. Coalition that it represents, I think, like 56 countries, and it represents the African ambassadors to UN, and they sharply denounced, Trump's reference to African nations as shitholes. They've called on him to retract the statement, apologize. I don't think it's going to happen. they say,
well, he can't apologize for what he didn't say.
Right. Right. There's that. And also, I don't think Trump gives a crap about the African Union. Let's see, what else?
I mean, actions have consequences. This kind of thing, he thinks it's all domestic and all playing to the base, but this does undermine understanding in the world even further. And like, this is not a harmless act that he's doing. It is going to absolutely alienate our allies all over the world, especially in the countries that he calls shitholes.
I mean, from Europe to Africa, there's so many, I mean, we really don't have a lot of friends anymore, I think, because of this president. But I think what it is that he thinks that, you know, that our country is so powerful and he stands behind that power and he wields that power that it doesn't matter. We don't need these relationships. We don't need these friendships. We don't need these allies anymore.
He thinks you can win him back with money and power. That's how he acts in his own life. So he assumes countries can do it the same way.
Win him back or make him bend to his will. Mm-hmm. You know, one way or the other. So anyhow,
Did you hear the other, I don't know if the whole chaos of the weekend you saw this, but the story about the foreign policy analyst, he came out as well.
No.
So there was, I think this was in the fall. I didn't see an exact date. But this was during the time when American and Canadian hostage, the family that was held in Pakistan, they were trying to negotiate the release, so they sent one of their hostage policy experts to go speak to him. So she's giving a briefing, and as she's done, the president's like, period.
Okay.
And he asks, where are you from? Because the hostage policy analyst is Asian American. So she tells him, New York. And he says, no, but where are you from? Where are you really from? Where are your people from? So she has to reveal that, you know,
her parents. What, her,
yeah, like my parents are Korean. And then Trump turns to one of his aides and asks, well, why then isn't the pretty Korean lady negotiating with North Korea? Because she's a hostage policy expert. I mean, if we have hostages in North Korea, maybe she'll do that. But
it's so funny that he asked her, no, where are you really from? I mean, as somebody who comes from an immigrant family, it's kind of the penultimate. It's like, you know, it's so stereotypical of like what a clueless white person will ask you.
And to ignore her whole, like, in fact, that she spent dedicated her
expertise,
life,
what she's talking about.
Hostage policy, like nothing to do with Korea or Asia or like, it's not like geographically based. It's a subject matter expertise. And he thinks, oh no, you're Korean. Your expertise has to be Korean as well.
Well, there's that. And also he's being a sexist asshole because he's just like, you're a pretty girl. I mean, this was really his play.
It's intersectionality on display. He's going to attack her from every angle he can without knowing it's an attack at all.
Intersectional assholery. That's what I call it.
That is exactly what this is. And I hope that there are papers written on this. So, and also last night, Trump did address these comments. And of course, he made the same claim as always. I am the least racist person of all time or whatever. Mm. Which, that sounds familiar. It should, because it's probably the 20th time that he said that.
All right. Well, with that, with those firm affirmations from our president that he is not a racist, I'll leave it to our listeners to decide whether or not they believe him. Susan, you and I think we can agree where we stand. And that's it for this week's episode. And thanks so much, Susan. We'll be back in a week with more updates, as long as hopefully there are no more missile alerts.
Hopefully it can slow down a little bit.
It's not happening.
Catch you guys next week.
All right, guys. And also a very, very happy Martin Luther King Day to all of you. We're recording on Martin Luther King Day, and I hope you guys were able to take this day to think about the legacy of Martin Luther King and to think about where we are as a country today. All right, guys. Until next week.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.